Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello, Blenders. It's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at CinemaBlend and the co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce an episode of Real Blend where we feature the original director of the first Twister film, Jan de Bont, who is a legend in his own right. If you only know him from Twister, you really should go back over his IMDb. As a cinematographer, worked on a number of incredible films that you absolutely grew up on. First and foremost, he shot Die Hard for John McTiernan. He was the cinematographer on Die Hard, and then parlayed that into a number of high-profile action films, thrillers in the 80s and 90s, before graduating over to the director's chair, where he directed, of course, the first Twister, and another movie that we talk at length with Jan de Bont about, which is Speed, which turns 30 this year. Incredible to hear him discuss the behind-the-scenes stuff on the Keanu Reeves film, all the work that he put into Twister with Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, the importance of putting together that cast, just some incredible, incredible stories from his career. And so when given the opportunity to talk to him on behalf of the 4K release of Twister as it was coming out onto shelves ahead of the... God, what do we call this? A sequel or a remake or a continuation? It's, it's something that's existing in the Twisters universe and looks like it's building on the work that Jan de Bont did. So I'd love to hear him sit down, go through his process, talk about a lot of the practical effects that they put into Twister, and also the advent of a lot of the visual effects that were coming about at that time. And then, of course, taking the time to dip into his past, his previous filmography, which of course we have to drill down a lot on Speed, which is getting a lot of attention for its anniversary. So without further ado, this is the Real Blend interview with the legendary Jan de Bont. Sir, you are an absolute legend who has made some of our favorite films of all time. So thank you for taking the time.
You're welcome. It's nice to talk to you.
I want to start here. In about a month, we are finally getting a follow-up to your film Twister, and it only took Hollywood nearly 30 years to figure out what to do. I'm really curious if there were any conversations or pressure to do a second one in the aftermath of the success of your first film.
There wasn't. I was one time we made an effort with Wes Moore, like 15 years ago, where we had a possible version of the script, and then the studio, they knew, like, listen, if he makes it the same way as the first one, it would be expensive, because it's a combination of special and visual effects, which is so difficult and hard to achieve and make them all really perfectly integrated. And then they kind of disappeared to nowhere land.
Interesting. Yeah, because you didn't want to compromise that vision, for sure.
No. That would be awful. That would be really, it also, it would never create the same intensity. You know, you can really, the fact that you, for instance, right now, you can do everything almost in the studio and put all the things around it. What I really wanted is I wanted the actors to feel and see as much as possible. So that's why you had rows of wind machines and stuff being thrown at them, and really, so that they basically could actually imagine what that incredible wall of a tornado would look like and that's coming at them and how dangerous it is.
Wow. Jan, I know we're talking to you for the 4K release, but one of my favorite pieces of trivia that I honestly just learned is that Twister was the very first movie ever put on DVD. It was the first DVD ever. And I'm just sort of curious if you remember that time that there was this thing coming out called DVD and what it meant that your film was the very first movie on DVD.
Yeah, I didn't know it was the very first one at the time. I thought this must be going on already for a while. But I was very excited because I felt like, what you have to realize though, it wasn't yet digital. It was all like in the old way of scanning the film and then making a version for the DVD and then transferring that. But then already I had figured out, oh my God, if this gets much better, I can control a lot more. All the things that didn't work the first time, I can now fix. I can now really. So I was so looking forward to this better version, and that finally happened. I mean, like this new Ultra HD one is quite stunning in that I was so able now to integrate all the things that I couldn't do yet before, like how to match the visual effects with the actual really special effects and make them look like one. And that combined with the live action, it's really hard to have three different qualities and make them look like one. And that is so exciting for this version. I was really, really happy with it.
It looks, I got to say, I watched it on my 4K TV here in Chicago. It looks damn good. It honestly does not look like a nearly 30-year-old movie. It looks pretty incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm proud of it. And really felt like, you know, with those new OLED screens, if you have, for instance, like say you have a frame of 35 millimeter and you blow it up to a 50-foot screen, or even a 70 millimeter to a 50-foot, you can imagine how the quality is being stretched out in all directions. And meaning, but if you put that same image on a 65-inch or 75-inch OLED screen, it is amazing. It's like 100% better, if not more. And I think that, to be honest, that the experience you can create now at home is as good as in film theater, if not better, because I feel that the sound combined with that, the sound in surround, which really can surround you right now, is actually intimate. While in the theater is overwhelming, at home, it feels like it really is almost meant for you only. And that is such a great feeling. It's like really, so it's not trying to overwhelm you at home. It's just trying to really make you part of the whole experience.
Interesting.
You know, when I was 12 years old, I saw this film in theater. I still have my ticket for it, actually, at home. The ink looks really great on it. But you know, I think back to pivotal moments that I had in cinema as a kid, and your film was one of them. And primarily the first thing I think about are the cows, because it was such an iconic moment in that film. And we're talking all these years later about the movie. What do you remember about creating that scene, getting the cows? I mean, obviously you're dealing with CGI and physical practical effects in certain regards as well. But what do you remember about filming that scene, telling the actors what was there, where the idea came from? And did you, you know, was there any clue that it would become kind of what it became in cinema?
Yeah, good question. I looked at films of that Sophia Weather Laboratory in Oklahoma at the university. And I saw this image of a cow in a tree. It's like, and I said, is this a joke that you guys made up? I said, no, it's a real cow. And it was still alive, was up in a tree. And then I said, can you imagine what it would have been for that cow being picked up from the meadow, turned around while still mowing, and then being landing in a tree? I said, well, that's a great idea. I said, we have to get it in a film. And then I started talking to the visual effect, can we make a cow? I mean, like, and they did, and everybody loved it. And then it turns out, which I didn't know was going to turn out, like, such an incredibly important, funny joke in the movie. Not a joke, but really, like, you cannot not liking it. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Do you remember, like, telling the actors, like, where to look? Like, what did the actors know that the cow was part of that scene when they filmed it, or did you add that in later? What was that experience like for them?
No, the actors did, because they had to say a cow.
That's right.
I think it's the same cow. That's right. So they had to know. And I was trying to imagine. So like if you would see because they could not imagine a cow. So I said, imagine like a bird. A bird comes by, a fly by, and a little bit later, the bird. And that's a speech you kind of have to follow. And you are like a big bird, like a hawk or even an eagle or something. And that would be really, that would sort of have surprised them too. That they could imagine. They could not imagine a cow. So they're really basically following an imaginary bird left and right.
It's hilarious.
Iconic.
Jan, I've heard you say this about your casting for this movie, that, and it made me think about all of your characters, honestly, in all of your films, whether it's Bill Paxton or Helen Hunt, Sandra Bullock, Keanu Reeves, that they are everyday people. They're relatable people. We can look up on the screen and see ourselves, you know, or someone that we know being put into this action. They're not necessarily larger than life personas. And I'm genuinely curious if that's something that you always appreciated, or maybe something you took away from working with John McTiernan and Bruce Willis on the original Die Hard.
Yeah, but Die Hard, Bruce was already a little bit of that person. Now, I wanted people that really actually that they could have been picked up the street. For instance, Sandra, I chose her because when I saw her, I could actually believe that she, first of all, would drive a bus and that she could steer a bus. And if you don't believe that, you cannot hire any actor. And the same with Keanu. He's kind of a reluctant actor. He kind of doesn't want to be that hero, but he's kind of, you know, forced to the circumstances to become one. And then he slowly accepted. But you can see that in his personality as it developed. And so that's exactly with this movie, too. I felt that all those guys or that whole team had to be recognized as real scientist storm chasers. Mm-hmm. I had to believe that. So I had to really, I mean, I showed him lots of films and things like that. And in fact, the creating those walls, I mean, what in the case with the cows and birds, but for them to imagine what it would look like, I had those rows of wind machine and put extra debris in front of them, all come at them so that the whole image was filled. So it wasn't just one little thing that looked like one green ball. No, they really, it was all over them, and it was touching them. And that made them actually realize how big it is and how powerful it is. And that was extremely helpful. So after 2 weeks, I think they all got it. Not only that, they all started to use that lingo from Stone Chasers throughout the day, even during dinner. That was really fun.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Saving money now at Menards. Mastercraft has been making great doors inside and out for over 50 years. Choose from the best in-stock selection of doors ready to take home today, or design your door your way in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft doors at Menards, America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. For J.D. Power 2024 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at Menards. Jan, speaking of casting, I had read that before Bill Paxton signed on, that Tom Hanks was really close to doing the part. And I was curious as to if there was any truth to it, and did it come from, like, because they were just on Apollo 13? Did Tom recommend Bill?
Yeah, I think I happened to know Tom Hanks at the time. And really liked him, but I could not really see him exactly being a storm chaser. Mm-hmm. And Bill Paxton, he's a force of nature. He is wild. He's a little bit of a wild man. And he, when I saw him, I only knew him from movies. I had never seen him. And then when I met him, and the way his enthusiasm and his incredible energy, that's what I needed for that. Mm-hmm. And he was like basically the only choice. And
oh, wow.
No, Jan, if you're gonna nickname someone the extreme, they better live up to it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And he is like that. He's extreme in everything he does. So it was so with him, you know, if he, for instance, the scene where the hail, the snow, ice cubes come towards the truck, you know, I said, make sure you put your jacket on and over your head, so you, because ice is really hard when it hits you. No, I want to feel the real thing. And he climbed from the front of the truck onto the bed, and he got hit by really bigger cubes of ice, and he didn't care. He didn't stop acting, and he started bleeding on the forehead. No stopping acting. He was so into that. And that is, all those guys were so completely believing that role. That was so great to see that.
You know, one thing we're talking about casting, I tell the guys this all the time. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman, outside of his dramatic acting, is one of the funniest actors I've seen. Like I remember seeing Along Came Polly, which is my favorite performance of his, because he's so ridiculously over the top. But we all think of him as this crazy, like, very serious, dramatic actor. So you got to play with him in a lot more of a fun role, which I'm just curious from your perspective as a director, you know, the comedic element of Philip Seymour Hoffman's acting side that I feel like a lot of people almost forget about sometimes.
No, I loved him and I wanted him because of that. Because, for instance, when he explained to Melissa what a tornado is, and when they're sitting on the chair, and it's so ridiculous. it's like he's trying to be a professor while laughing and while being really grand storm chaser. That was so funny. I couldn't stop laughing while shooting that. He's such a comedic talent. I mean, of course, he loved the drama maybe more, but I thought that part of it was amazing. I loved it.
Jan, we're film nerds, so whenever you get to a drive-in movie sequence and you decide to put The Shining up on screen, you know, we all get a kick out of your choice of what film that's going to be. I'm just genuinely curious if there was a reason why you picked The Shining as the movie that was showing during the drive-in.
I had that in mind almost in the very beginning of the production process, and I told the studio, I want to see on that screen a part of The Shining where Nicholson with his axe breaks through the wall and comes right at me. Because I basically created five different tornadoes. The first one was kind of like a pretty boy, beautiful, but not knowing what to do. The second one was like basically always talking to each other, and they really, that became the double water tornado. Another one was the big bully, and the big bully, that was the second time, that was him, and I wanted to see him as the big bully as his face comes through. And and they said, oh, you never get that from Kubrick. But I had spoken to Kubrick once before, and he had by that time seen Speed, and he loved it. And he said, absolutely, you can do that. And no problem at all. And it was so great to really, because the studio absolutely didn't believe it, because it was the same studio that represented his movies, no?
Sure.
So, yeah. And they said, no, you can't, let me try it. And he said, absolutely. It was so great.
Did you call him or write a letter?
No, we had to. The first studio wrote a very polite letters, but that's not how it really works. You have to really, and also, as my childhood, when I was still living in Amsterdam, so the very first movie on the big screen I ever saw was 2001. I went to London in the first week of the opening of the movie, and I was totally blown away. Like, that type of storytelling, that kind of visual storytelling was so revealing, so new, so exciting. And since then, I've been an eternal fan of Kubrick. So.
Oh, that's magnificent. Thank you for sharing that.
That's an amazing story. You mentioned Mr. Kubrick being a fan of Speed. Just a couple of weeks ago, Sandra Bullock said that she really wanted to do another film with Keanu Reeves, and then subtly mentioned how great it would be to reunite for a Speed 3. If the two of them said that they were willing to do it, would you come back and get behind the camera again to get the two of them back together in something?
I have to say it was a maybe, because there has to be a good script. There has to be something that can be as exciting and that has that really fresh attitude to filmmaking as the first one. If not, it cannot just be like the problem with Speed 2 is that first of all, we couldn't get the actor, and now all things fell apart, and then we still had to make the movie. And when you start losing that, it's you demand too much from the audience. I think you have to make the audience really giving that sense that, yeah, this is a real continuation, you know. I was so happy that they did that interview, by the way, because I mean, and during the moving, that relationship was up and down, up and down, up and down. And I was so happy that they were back together, that they were really actually talking again. Mm-hmm. There was like all those young actors are always like issues, and Keanu loves to walk on the set, making those big Shakespeare speeches nonstop, and it drove everybody a little crazy, and I think it drove her a little bit crazy too. It's like because he wants to do a Shakespeare movie so badly, and we were doing Speed, for God's sake, and we didn't need that theatrical thing. That's the last thing the movie would use. It would kill the movie. So we tried to have him stop, but he couldn't stop it. But ultimately, it was actually really fun that near the end of the movie, they really finally really got together and they kind of connected.
Said, Keanu, the bus is the star. Stop this.
which is true, which is kind of so silly, though, because I mean, like, who would make a boss the star of a movie, you know? I mean, for that matter, how do you make a character like the tornado a star of a movie? These are undirectable things. Okay. And the same, like King Kong and Godzilla, which are both actually some of my favorite movie stars. You can't do that, you know. You can't create a character, a creature out of something abstract and make it work in the same way as the rest of the story. And that is fun to do. I love doing those difficult things.
Well, yeah. One more quick question before we let you go. The pop quiz hotshot line. I was just curious what your memory of that line was, and kind of how that was put into the script, and kind of your direction of that line.
We changed a lot of lines from the script on the set, because once you get going, you see, oh, this is the connection. This is how they speak. This is what they should do. And I called Josh Whedon at the time, and he already had worked on all. And he said, Josh, I need a line for Inner Elevator. This guy pushes the button while they're falling down at high speed to the ground in the elevator. What can they possibly say that can be light and be funny? And then he came up, what button did he push? Did you push? That was all. He gave me that line on the set just before shooting. And that's what the actor said. And that was so funny. And I've been in so many elevators where people quite often, especially in the beginning, where people say, what button did you push? You know, like everybody's repeating that same line in regular life situations. It's very funny.
Jan, we can't thank you enough for your time. We are enormous fans of your work and love Twister, and can't wait for people to see it in the 4K. Thanks for coming on the Real Blend podcast.
Okay, thank you very much.
We have to thank our good friends at Warner Home Video for hooking us up with some time with Jan DeBont. Pleasure to have him on the show. Love the story that he told about calling Stanley Kubrick to get permission to put The Shining on the drive-through movie screen. I thought that was terrific. Also love, Kevin came up with that great question about the pop quiz hotshot and the origin of that. Really, really cool to hear how that came together. And just these funny stories about how you never really know where an idea is going to stem from or collaboration that's going to lead to something that becomes legendary over time. So really happy to have him come on and talk about Twister as well, too. I'd mentioned on the show, you know, just the, watching the behind the scenes stuff on this 4K for Twister. It's making of featurettes that were, you know, available at the time, but I probably just never got a chance to see them. And the amount of work that goes into, you know, shooting on location, figuring out ways to replicate the effects of the storm and just put the actors through, you know, what's supposed to feel like the experience of being in the middle of these Category 4, Category 5 storms is incredible. And so I'm kind of interested to see how much of that practicality converts over to Twisters with the S, not the dollar sign. And we'll get a chance to check that one out very soon. In fact, you know, we have Jan DeBont on. It's setting up a little bit of a hashtag if it happens. So we're hoping to get Lee Isaac Chung to come on and talk about Twisters. So stay tuned to see if that's going to be materializing on Real Blend anytime soon. In the meantime, on Friday, we're going to be talking about the new film Fly Me to the Moon with Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum. And we have the director of that film, Greg Berlanti, joining us as an interview on that show. And then we have a couple other things cooking, some really important ones, including maybe a return to the show of a two-time guest who might be joining us to talk about a pretty big blockbuster that's coming to summer theaters. So hashtag if it happens, get your prayer circles going and help us out as we encourage people to come back to Real Blend and have a good time on our show. We thank you guys, of course, for tuning into the show on a regular basis, checking us out, listening to our interviews. And as the group of us get together to talk about films, go see Twisters when it comes to theater. And of course, grab the 4K copy of Jan DeBont's classic film Twister once it reaches stores near you.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.